Hi there, and welcome to the Crypto Frontier. I'm Jonathan Miller, Managing Director of Kraken Australia, and I'm glad you could join me out here on the Crypto Frontier. On this show, you'll hear from the industry's best and brightest about the latest news in crypto markets and industry from Australia and around the world. Tune in fortnightly to gather the latest insights and data to power your trading. Whether you haven't yet bought your first Bitcoin or want to better understand the latest DeFi token, this show will explore the latest in market data trends and go behind the scenes to explore the technology that powers the future of finance.
Now for some of the latest news in crypto, brought to you by Kraken Intelligence. According to Mastercard's new payment index, a survey of close to 16,000 consumers across 18 markets, millennials are primed to jump into the industry. The report found that 77% of millennials are interested in learning more about crypto, and 75% of millennials agree that they'd be using crypto if they understood better. The report also found that the COVID-19 pandemic has galvanized people to try flexible, new payment options to get what they want when they want it, with over 90% of MasterCard customers considering using a form of emerging payments technology. In some more adoption news, Sotheby's will accept BTC and ETH payments starting with the next week's auction of Love is in the Air by Banksy, which is estimated to sell for $3 to $5 million. They're obviously jumping on to the back of the extreme interest in NFT sales and the use of crypto to buy art. Okay, that's all the news today. For more insight, make sure you subscribe to the Kraken Intelligence newsletter at kraken.com. Now for my guest on today's show, it's a pleasure to introduce you to Rob Allen, who sits on the Hedera Hashgraph Governing Council. Rob, welcome to the show. I'd love if you could introduce yourself to our audience, and then I'll ask you a couple of questions about Hedera.
Hey, Jonathan. Thank you for having me. So I'm Rob Allen. I'm the entrepreneur in residence at FPOS Australia. I also sit on the governing council for Hedera Hashgraph. I guess I'm an engineer, technologist. I've been building payment systems and startups for a long time now. And I'm here to talk to you about Hedera Hashgraph.
Excellent. So, I mean, jumping straight into Hedera then, can you tell me, you know, who founded it?
Sure. So, first I'll say I don't speak for Hedera. I'm not employed by them. But we have been building projects with them for a while. So, and having been sitting on the governing council now for 5 months, I'm pretty well versed in some of the history. The Hedera Hashgraph Network was founded by a couple of guys in America called Dr. Lehman Baird and Mance Harmon. Lehman is a professor, deep computer scientist, and inventor. Mance Harmon used to be head of war games for the US Air Force, and both Lehman and Mance have been working together for a number of years, and founded a couple of startups as well since they both left the Air Force. So they're the founders. Lehman invented Hedera Hashgraph back in 2012, 2013, I think he was looking at the same sorts of problems that blockchains were seeking to solve, but from first principles, and came up with a Hashgraph algorithm, which is what the Hedera network is based upon.
That's really interesting. I'd like to get into a little bit more about the layers of Hedera, because there are several, but at a really high level, you know, I guess people who are listening to this show, they're probably exposed to a bunch of the different cryptocurrencies, and it's kind of nice to know in relation to the ones that they do know, the obvious ones, you know, what is different about Hedera, because that's kind of a nice way to explore these ideas sometimes.
Sure. So well, from the crypto angle, the native token of the Hedera network is called the HBAR, HBAR, and the network's proof of stake So staking these tokens creates the both utility and security on the network. It's a public network, and the layers of technology that sit above the Hashgraph consensus algorithm itself are all open source. At this stage, the nodes are hosted by the governing council members. And so one of the key innovations for Hedera was to build an enterprise-grade public distributed ledger network that would not be forked, that would not be compromised through civil attacks or other forms of other attack vectors that some of these networks are undermined by, because Hedera have laid out a vision for a 100-year company on which enterprises, both big and small across the world, can build on this trust layer. And with that vision in mind, there's a very slow and controlled process of decentralization. So from the governing council hosted nodes, just as we're bootstrapping the network, through the distribution of the HBARs to enable wide enough distribution to ensure the security of the network, because under proof of stake, one stakes tokens to nodes. And so you don't want any one bad actor to accumulate enough of those tokens too early to be able to take over the network. So this is quite a deliberately slow and controlled process of decentralization, but ultimately the whole network will be decentralized. It will have, anybody will be able to host nodes and benefit from the network fees and staking rewards and everything else that goes with a fully decentralized network.
Okay, so there's a kind of pathway there to come to, I guess, distributed parity with some of the networks that already exist. But what are the? Can you tell me a little bit about the structure of Hedera? So, you've mentioned the word consensus layer. So tell me about the other layers and how they interact.
So the consensus mechanism, the algorithm that sits at the heart of this network is the thing that enables the network to be distributed and come to a consensus across the whole network, like any other distributed ledger technology or blockchain. What it exposes on top of that are two key services, one which is called the Hedera Consensus Service and one which is called the Hedera Token Service. Now, these are relatively new services that you can interact with via APIs. And the consensus service is just that. It's like having a blockchain API. You never really need to stand up a blockchain ever again, because you can get all the benefits of that just directly by the API. The token service is only released about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and that enables you to create and manage both fungible and non-fungible tokens on the network natively. And that's really important, because other networks that have, let's say, smart contract-based ways of tokenizing and creating true ownership over digital assets are bound by things like gas fees or solidity, smart contract instructional cycles, and an inherent kind of slowness rather in that design pattern. Whereas with Hedera, there's a network that has is fast. I mean, it's throttled back at the moment, but it's it operates at 10,000 transactions a second, up to 100,000 transactions a second, and that's before sharding. So sharding can effectively make this network scale to whatever it needs to be in the future. It's inherently secure, so you've got the gold standard of security, which is asynchronous Byzantine fault tolerance. Because we don't have chains of blocks, every single event, every single transaction is fairly ordered against the others. So on a blockchain, you've effectively got sequencing or ordering on a block-by-block basis. And then the miner determines what order the transactions go inside that block. With Hedera, every single event is ordered and transparently and verifiably ordered fairly. And then finally, it's the stability of the network. When you've got the inability to fork that network, because there are controls, technical controls and legal controls around forking of that that network. And the pricing of the network is pegged to US dollars. So a transaction costs 1/100th of a US cent. It's paid for by HBAR, it's paid for in the token, but it's at the current value of that token in US dollars. So what that means is that businesses can build applications, distributed applications, enterprise platforms, and use this network and be able to forecast and plan for what those costs might be, which you can't do on other networks that are very volatile and have big swings in gas fees and the value of the cryptocurrency. So those are the things that Hedera has solved for at that base layer. And then they expose the ability for applications to be built on top of those beneficial properties of the network via the consensus service and the token service APIs. And then there are all sorts of there's open source demo code that you can pick up and build your business with. There's repos and repos of that stuff, which is great.
That's really fascinating. I think the fixed price per transaction in a dollar format is definitely unique. How do they achieve that? Is there an oracle used here?
Yeah. I think they're using 10 different exchanges globally that gets updated on an hourly basis. So the pricing is not real time yet, but it's fairly close to that.
Okay, so we've got a pretty an established consensus layer and some quite new services. But my assumption here is that there's been a bit of playing around by some of the either governing council members or other people beforehand. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the projects that that might be using this or planning to use this?
Yeah, so I mean, let me just say a couple of things about the governing council first. One of the key innovations that that Hedera determined really early was that other networks have had challenges through governance, whether it be a group of developers somewhere, or it might be cult of personality type driven network, or something else. Because Hedera is very much focused on business, like I say, great and small, the governance was determined to be around that kind of enterprise governing processes that that enterprises find familiar. And so the governing council is 39 members strong, or will be ultimately. There's nothing special about that number. It's just an odd number, around 40. And the governance, or the governing council, is by design decentralized. So there's no concentration in the financial sector, for example. There's no concentration in for Silicon Valley tech companies. It's decentralized across sectors, across geographies, across time zones, and through time as well, because there are only 3-year cycles that you can renew only once. So maximum of 6 years that any of those governing council members can sit on that governing council. Remember, this is designed as a 100-year company, as effectively a new trust layer for the internet, and therefore that stability, that continuity of oversight and governance is really, really important. And this has attracted some of the world's biggest companies. So I can't list them all off the top of my head, but you know, you've got Google, IBM, FIS, Shinhan Bank in South Korea. You've got UCL, University College London, FPOS, ourselves. There's Standard Bank in South Africa, Tata and Wipro, Boeing, Zain Group in the Middle East. So, you know, there's some pretty big and not necessarily Fortune, you know, 50 type companies. There are some of those as well, but regionally significant and sector significant companies. You've got two big legal companies, Dentons and DLA Piper, which are two of the biggest legal companies in the world. Avery Dennison, one of the biggest logistics companies in the US. Magaloo, which is one of the biggest retailers in South America. So as you can see, there's some, you know, significant businesses in there who are not only partnering, but owning. Being a governing council member requires you to have done all the due diligence, you know, get your risk officer and your general counsel across the fact that you're actually you're buying in to the ownership of a crypto-driven next-generation network, which for some is you know, quite difficult. So that governing council is in place to host those networks. So host the nodes. The FPOS will be or is hosting the first node in Australia. And there are mainnet nodes and there are mirrornet nodes, and I can go into that later if you want. But there's a kind of a secondary network for persisting data, and all of these governing council members are committed to building on the network in various ways. So a couple that have become very public recently, DLA Piper has built a tokenization platform called Toko, that is tokenizing art and real estate, and now obviously getting into NFTs because they're so hot right now. So they're doing that, and that looks like it's going really well. Avery Dennison have just come out with a token-based platform as well in the US, which is being well reviewed by loads of startups that are building their own token services on top of it. It's one called Suku, which is tokenizing collectible sneakers, turning them into NFTs. There's some great supply chain examples of building on that network as well by Avery Dennison's platform. And then FPOS, we've been looking at payments, of course, because that's our core business, but also identity. So digital identity is one of the things I'm primarily focused on. And so applications of the Hedera network for micropayments, Internet of Things-based subcent payments. When you've got a transactional cost of a hundredth of a cent, you can do some really interesting things around micropayments and device-to-device transfers. And when you couple that with digital identity and self-sovereign identity applications, verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, then you've got a mix of components where you can build some really compelling and interesting new business models.
It sounds like the sky's the limit. What, one thing that I guess the community, you know, when it comes to Hedera, I think they're used to fully open source platforms from day zero. Is it fair to say that, you know, one of the reasons Hedera went down this path of, let's call it kind of picking or limiting the number of nodes to known actors via the governing council, was that so they could win over enterprise? And if so, will the rest of the world start participating?
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, there's a number of questions in there. The thinking, remember, cast your mind back to 2015, 2016. It seemed like every week there was a new Bitcoin fork. You know, there was another project, another splinter group that would fork Bitcoin, and we don't see it quite so often now. It's certainly not as public. But that was the time around which, you know, Hedera was kind of forming as Swirls, which is the company that that Manson Lehman set up to develop this technology. And the governance aspect and the patenting of the base layer algorithm was really to prevent that. You know, the hypothesis, which I believe to be true, is that enterprises won't build on top of a network which, from one day to the next, you don't know whether it's going to be forked or not, whether any value you've created on it will be transferred to a different chain or a different network. And that's not so bad from a store of value perspective, and we've seen in Bitcoin and others to be particularly resilient to this kind of forking over time. But from from attracting businesses to a network where not only are they kind of placing bets on decentralization, which is, you know, it's seeking to solve in the same way as other blockchain networks are, but it's hard to do change in big corporate organizations. It's obviously not just for corporates, it's for startups as well. And I've got a long list of startups I can talk you through if you want about the huge variety of businesses that are building on Hedera. But at the corporate end of the spectrum, you need stability. So stability in that surety that the network isn't going to fork. You can convince the board, you can convince the risk officers, you can convince your customers that you're acting in a stable and in a way which protects the business first and foremost. So all of those decisions have to be gone through in one's mind when you're changing technology for a big business. So there's that. And then the second part is the stability of pricing. So it's very hard, and we've seen some really good projects running on private forks of Ethereum, because you know you're not sort of beset by the winds of gas fees and volatility of pricing, but because the technology will work over three or four nodes with a big picket fence around the edge, but that's not really what it's there for. You know, public chains are inherently more secure when managed properly. So that was the first part of your question. Second part, really, I think was about these permissioned nodes. Well, yes, they are permissioned. They're permissioned right now, but within the next very short period of time, non-governing council members, trusted third parties, will be able to start standing up these nodes. So we won't be restricted to 39. It might be hundreds. And because we've got this controlled distribution of tokens, and we haven't distributed all the tokens all on day one, because that would be crazy to do as well. So there's a 15-year schedule to release the tokens over time, release them out of treasury, grant them to projects in the same way as other projects do, and to just have that sort of natural distribution of HBARs into the global community. As that happens over time, then the network itself will become more and more decentralized, and it will be protected. It will be protected both from the attacks that I mentioned earlier, but also from the scaling of the network too quickly, and will grow at a pace which is commensurate with the value that's being built on top of it.
I think it will, and I do want to hear a little bit about some of the smaller scale projects that are exploring HBAR. Are there any in Australia in particular that, you mentioned FPOS, which is really interesting, mm-hmm. because, micropayments is a thing that everyone always talks about. Oh, crypto adoption, micropayments. You hear those words a lot. So it's obvious that you guys are exploring that, but are there other areas as well in Australia or other projects that you know of or that you're involved in?
Well, let me just touch on micropayments first, because it means many things to different people. I come from the payments industry, 20-year veteran, and you talk to financial services, and anything under 50 cents is a micropayment, because it costs 50 cents or a dollar or many dollars to actually for the unit cost of each payment within the old school wires that have been with us for decades now, it seems. So, but in my mind, a microtransaction is tiny. I mean, it's less than a cent. It's 1/10 of a cent, 1/50 of a cent. It's got to be so small that no network that we currently exist could possibly transfer value over it. But when you get down to that level, it's like nanotechnology, I guess. Things start appearing in very different ways, and businesses that you can build with that sort of capability become possible. So we've just tested it on that simple use case about breaking down paywalls and subscription services and paper article that you consume online or paper second for streamed content. But I actually think that there's a far greater use case around devices and IoT. I think that if, I know you're a swimmer and I'm a runner, so maybe, we gamify this so that my Fitbit or my Garmin watch pays yours a cent for every meter I run more than you swim or something. I don't know. I mean, there's
you're lots, on.
There's lots of really interesting things that you can do. I love the idea about incentivizing networks of IoT devices through gateways, which is necessary. So incentivizing the gateways to be set up and run by mums and dads or schools or whatever, to create those networks around them, and you can do that at a tiny scale as well. You can sensors paying for services becomes really, really interesting. So that's just one thing that I'm particularly interested in. But I mean, other small businesses that are happening here in Australia. So Entrust is a supply chain company focused on the agricultural sector. So they're particularly interested in wine production and dairy production, and where processes, food production processes, need to be compliant with regulation or compliant with other rules. That's a really good use case for writing, data integrity use case or provenance use case, writing to a chain, but at high scale. So if it's only costing 1/100 of a cent for a transaction, and your wine production process needs to write thousands of those to prove to the regulator, to Wine Australia, that you're complying with the label integrity program, which says whatever you put on your wine bottle's label, you have to prove for 7 years that the fruit that's been picked and the process that's been done to get that wine into the bottle is compliant. So that's a really good use case. Miko are an Australian-based business who have a digital identity wallet, and they've recently made the switch to Hedera for self-sovereign wallet-based identity credentialing. We're actually working with them with FPOS now, Connect ID business. They're going great guns, and they've been around a long while. They're OGs in the blockchain and digital identity space, and they've seen a lot of technology come and go, but they have moved to Hedera because of all of the things that I've been talking about. Then there are businesses that are looking at loyalty and customer engagement. There's a company called eBucks, which is creating a customer engagement platform. There's NFTs and art auctions that I am aware of that are going to be based on Hedera here in Australia. Real estate, fractional ownership, because the network is so secure and the costs are so predictable, it becomes a very much more approachable business case that you can create. And actually, the APIs are very easy to use. So anyone that has expertise in programming in Go or in Node or in Ruby or any of the preferred Java, of course, any of the preferred coding languages that developers use these days can actually build on top of it very easily rather than having to go away and learn Solidity and bend over backwards to retrain. So that's another really good innovation that they've enabled. You can write Solidity smart contracts and run it on the EVM on the network, but it's as slow as it would be running it on Ethereum.
Well, it seems like there's lots of incentives for businesses who have cost constraints to explore this technology. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting that you were talking about was this idea of a nano payment, not a micro payment, but a nano payment. And it is the case, for a long time we've known that information is valuable, and the huge enormous business models, those businesses that shall not be named, make a lot of money out of information. But it seems that with platforms like Hedera and the incredibly low cost associated with the system, information is value. You're transmitting value. They're one and the same. So I mean, on that note, I think now's probably a good time to wrap up the chat. And I've really appreciated you coming on. I think it's definitely cause for us to get you back in a little while at some point, perhaps to talk in more detail about digital identity and the stuff that you're doing, because that's another area I'm super interested in. And I just have to thank you for coming on the show, Rob.
My absolute pleasure. Identity is one of my passions too. So let's do that another time.
All right, thanks so much. Make sure you subscribe and review us on your favorite podcast platform of choice, and we will make sure we take you right to the edge of the crypto frontier. And remember, you can learn more about all things crypto by visiting kraken.com/learn. And until next time, I've been Jonathan Miller, and this has been the Crypto Frontier.